This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detectthesos.com to learn more.
There's nothing like gaining a fresh perspective from experts who've seen it all and have the wisdom to prove it. With MasterClass, you can learn from the best to become your best. With plans starting at $10 a month, billed annually, you get unlimited access to over 200 plus classes taught by the world's best business leaders, writers, chefs, and more. With MasterClass, you get thousands of bite-sized lessons across 13 categories that can fit into even the busiest of schedules. And the classes really make a difference. 3 in 4 surveyed members feel inspired every time they watch MasterClass. And 83% of surveyed members have applied something they've learned from MasterClass to their lives. MasterClass always has great offers during the holidays, sometimes up to as much as 50% off. Head over to masterclass.com/audio for the current offer. That's up to 50% off at masterclass.com/audio. masterclass.com/audio.
Welcome to Healthy Matters, presented by Hennepin Healthcare, a network of neighborhood clinics, specialty centers, hospital, and Minnesota's Level 1 Adult and Pediatric Trauma Center. Please remember, we can only give general medical advice during the program, and every case is unique. We urge you to consult with your personal physician if you have health concerns. Now, here's Denny Long with your host, Dr. David Hilden, internal medicine physician with Hennepin Healthcare, with more Healthy Matters.
And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Hennepin's Healthy Matters on CCO Radio. Nice to have you here. Dr. David Hilden is your host. I thought you'd be coming in running shorts today because it's so balmy out.
It is balmy out. Yeah. I think we're having a heat wave.
Yeah, a little bit.
I'm kind of looking forward to it. I'm working today, so I'll go over to the hospital after the show today. But hopefully get outside just a little bit.
Yeah, it is. I know that's
spring
a trade-off.
Spring is in the air, Dave.
It's a trade-off, except for the folks that have own ski areas. And
I know.
Like
I guess that sounds good.
Snowmobiles.
Actually, I'm kind of kidding. I would love a foot of snow.
Well, you would.
Yes. If it's going to be winter, it might as well be winter. You know.
Well, you've got snow tires on your car.
Snow tires on. I'm ready to go. I got a new shovel.
All right. You're set.
I'm ready to go. I don't have any gas for the snowblower, though. So that's a.
You better get prepared for that.
Note to self. But not in the near future. I heard there's no snow coming.
I mentioned this a couple times earlier, Dr. Hilden, about the show today. This is going to bring in, I think, a lot of text messages and a lot of phone calls as well.
I think it will. We're going to talk about your knees and your hips. We're going to talk about knee replacement surgery, hip replacement surgery, why you might need to get those done, what to expect. And as regular listeners to the show know, I'm an internist, which means I don't know anything about your knees and your hips. An internist is an internal medicine doctor. That's what I do. I do chronic diseases of adults. But fortunately, at Hennepin, we've got one of the best. I'm going to go with it's the best orthopedic surgery department around. It's run by a guy I've known for many years named Andy Schmidt. He's one of the best surgeons you'll ever meet, but he has assembled just an outstanding staff of orthopedic surgeons and support staff and nurses in the Department of Orthopedic Surgery. So this is one of the things I can say without bias. I don't work for that department, but I tell patients all the time, if you need your knees done, if you need your hips done, if you need orthopedic surgery, you should just drive by everywhere else and you come down to Hennepin because we have the best department going. To help me out today to talk about knees and hip replacement, I have George Hansen. He is one of the orthopedic surgeons. He does both of those types of surgeries. He also does trauma surgery. So if you get broken up, you know, if you get your broken bones, he can do that for you as well. Dr. Hansen, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dr. Hilden. Appreciate it.
Great to have you, George. Great to have you. Now, you're I have only met George this year. Yeah, he came from elsewhere. Where are you originally from, and where'd you do all your training, George?
Sure. So from Chicago originally. Did an undergraduate degree over at MIT with aerospace engineering.
Out in Cambridge?
Cambridge, Mass. And then after 4 years of working in kinematics research at the biomechanics lab out in Boston, came back to Chicago for medical school training out at Rush University. From there, I did an internship and residency over at Detroit Med Center, Wayne State, out in Michigan. And then I did my first fellowship in orthopedic trauma over at Metro Health out in Cleveland, associated with Case Western. And then finished up with a hip and knee adult reconstruction fellowship, so hip and knee replacement fellowship, over at Mass General Hospital back in Boston, one of the Harvard affiliates.
So you're well-traveled, and you're also well-trained. That's an enormous amount of training. What was the first thing you said about kinematics, or what was that?
Sure. Yeah, so it's looking at research. It's looking at the motion of the knee, and the idea behind the research that we were doing back in Boston was, you know, if we can understand the motion of the knee from both a healthy and from an injured standpoint, can we figure out a way to reverse engineer the design of the implant? So we spent most of the time looking at more of the injured knee as well as actually the motion of comparing that to the motion of the current knee replacements and trying to figure out, you know, how can we actually tweak the design of the current implants to make them better?
So I'm a former engineer, a recovering engineer. That's cool. That's sort of like knee engineering right there. And then you do trauma. You did a special advanced training in trauma, and you did advanced training in, you said, reconstruction. I think we're going to talk about whatever the listeners would like to on either of those. But I'm going to start out with why someone might need to get a hip replaced or a knee replaced. So what are the common reasons? Is it just, explain to me, I come into you, I've got knee pain or hip pain. What might be going on in my knee, and what might you tell me?
Sure. First thing is talking to the patient, figuring out, you know, what's going on. You know, is it a achy pain? Is it, you know, something that's been going on for a long time? Is it something that's kind of come on gradually versus something that's coming on much more acutely? So something that comes on very fast, suddenly, you know, you're fine 1 second and all of a sudden, you know, bang, it hits you. And, you know, so that can start to already kind of starts to sway what you think might be going on. But, you know, from a, you know, looking at it from a knee replacement or hip replacement standpoint, you know, we're usually looking at, you know, patients who've started to develop some level of arthritis, which is an inflammatory process or wearing away of the cartilage. And as that gets bad enough, usually it becomes harder and harder to walk and to be able to do activities of daily life. And once that's gotten bad enough, then we talk about, you know, other options.
So when people – knee, I get. Someone's knee hurt when they walk or when they move. People get refer to the hip in different ways. Sometimes they talk about the area and I'm slapping the side of my, you know, the bony part of the side of your leg. Sometimes it's in the groin area. You know, well, how does hip pain, if you have hip arthritis, what does that pain feel like?
Sure, absolutely. So, and I agree. Unfortunately, when we talk about, you know, colloquially about the hip, I mean, really, you know, I've had it go anywhere from, you know, the belly button and lower part of the abdomen to all the way around to the back, all the way down to mid thigh. So, you know, when as a surgeon, when we're looking for actual hip pain, so the actual ball and socket joint, we're actually looking for kind of the what we call medial deep groin. So, you know, it's not the outside part of the hip. That's actually a different part of the femur or the thigh bone.
It's your thigh bone, right? A lot of people point to that out there. They say it hurts up here at my hips because that's when you're, I guess, getting measured for clothing and they put a tape measure around you. Yeah. That's your hip area. But you're talking about the groin.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah. So, and that's probably the most classic location for that sort of, for an arthritic pain. Less commonly, but also can also be seen kind of more of a posterior buttock. So, you know, more kind of in the meat of the buttock, kind of shooting out the back. That's, you know, not necessarily the sitting bone, but it's going to be higher than that. And you can also feel the pain in that direction as well.
So I come into you, or a listener who's listening now says, yep, that sounds like me. I have daily pain in those areas, and they come in to see you in the clinic. How do you diagnose whether or not they are a candidate for surgery?
Sure. So There's a few things. First thing is just listening to the patient, figuring out, what are the limitations? Can you do everything in your daily life? Can you go up and down stairs? Can you, do things that you like to do? Do you like to garden? Do you like to bicycle? Do you like to play golf or tennis? Can you still play with your grandkids? As you start getting a feel for, what the patient is and isn't able to do, that starts to kind of give you a first kind of level of the patient's overall kind of disability, or at least perceived disability, with the problem that's going. The next step is actually then really doing the physical exam. Can I recreate the pain that the patient's talking about? And, ideally, the more I can localize that pain to that deep groin location, then the more confident that I feel that, that's actually the hip that's actually generating the pain.
How do you do that? Do you put them on a table and just start wiggling the leg around and moving it around?
Yeah. So there's certain maneuvers that we look for. We like to know, one, what's the overall range of motion? We do expect that with arthritis, patients can become more stiff over time. We start looking at, side to side. Thankfully, God gives us, for the most part, two joints. So we're able to then kind of compare side to side. And we can start to see some subtle differences that start to indicate that, there might be some sort of either mechanical block, or there might be some stiffness that's starting to show that there is a side to side difference. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we will test for is probably one of the most reliable is, if we're able to get the patient flex up to 90 degrees at the hip, and then we test them in internal rotation. So what we're trying to do is try to knock the ball of the head, into the cup. And if that causes some irritation, and they're able to localize that pain into the groin, then, again, that's probably one of the most reliable signs.
And you said a ball and socket. So it's your hip joint is really made of your thigh bone, which does have a ball on the end of it, right? It's
Correct.
Sort of like a trailer hitch ball. And then is that kind of, and then the socket, is that just sort of a, what does that look like? You look at them actually. Is it just kind of a hollow cavity that the ball of the thigh bone fits in?
Exactly. And then on top of that, then there's something called a labrum, which kind of acts as like a gasket. And that actually helps kind of keeps a good seal over the ball itself. That helps kind of keep the cartilage bathed in synovial fluid, which is just it's a lubricant for the cartilage.
Yeah, I always kind of think of a trailer hitch.
It looks like that when we first start out, but over time,
that where you buy them when you get your replacement parts? You go down to the auto parts store and buy a 2-inch trailer hitch ball.
Might have a good business plan.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Okay, so you've talked to the patient, you found out about their pain history, and then you do a physical exam. What's next?
Sure. The next thing is then correlating basically their story, their physical exam, and then looking at the x-rays and saying, all right, well, how does all this fit with, what do I expect to see on the x-rays? And, with that story, if I'm thinking about arthritis, I should expect to see arthritis on that imaging. And most of the time it does actually, correlate. And then we can then start talking about, treatment options for arthritis. If the x-rays don't seem to suggest that, they don't seem to coincide, then we start saying, well, maybe we needed additional imaging. Maybe I need to go back to the exam, or maybe I need to ask a few additional pointed questions to see if there isn't something else that I'm missing.
Are you usually able to do that, make the diagnosis sufficient to do surgery just on a plain x-ray, or do you often have to get things like a CT scan or other kinds of advanced imaging?
No, I would say vast majority of the time, really, plain x-rays is all we need. We will get patients saying, well, did you look at the MRI? Did you look at the CT scan? And I'll often tell them, it's like, well, we can, but there's no reason.
It ain't going to change anything. I can see that bone crushing the other bone right on the x-ray.
The only thing that you're doing is paying someone else a lot of money for those additional imaging, or putting yourself at risk with additional radiation.
Okay, we're going to talk then. We're talking to Dr. George Hansen, orthopedic surgeon, about knee and hip surgery, particularly hip and knee replacements. We're going to welcome your calls, and the text line is going nuts already. But we're going to talk after the break about what types of surgery. I'm going to ask George to tell us about what the surgeries are like and what you might expect.
All right, very good. We'll do that. We'll take a quick break, inviting our listeners to join in. As you said, Dr. Hilden, they're already doing that on our text line, 81807. If you want to phone in your question, 989-9226. And welcome back to more of Healthy Matters. Here again is your host, Dr. David Hilton.
Thank you, Denny. We're talking to Dr. George Hansen, orthopedic surgeon at Hennepin Healthcare. He specializes in surgery of your bones and joints, both in things like knee and hip replacement and also in trauma care. So, George, tell us about a surgery. So if you've decided that I need a hip replacement or a knee replacement, what can I expect? What kind of equipment do you use? How big of a deal is it? How long is it? You know, just talk us through a surgery, what you would tell me, please.
Sure. Probably just kind of in broad strokes. I mean, again, you know, the decision to go forward with either hip or knee replacement, it's a big deal. Once we've taken out that cartilage, there's no going back. So, we want to make sure that, you know, the patient is really confident in their decision, because ultimately, once the surgeon has offered the surgery, it's really up to the patients to kind of make that final decision. The patient really has to be able to decide and be confident in their decision that, they're doing the right thing, right? And, the worst thing in the world is, being the surgeon and the patient's looking at you as you're rolling to the OR saying, well, should I be doing this? That's the wrong time to be having that question.
Right.
So you should really be, kind of saying, I am ready to go. I'm looking forward to tomorrow despite, what's going to be coming on. So what to expect, from the surgery itself? I tell my patients, you're not going to like me in the first month. It's hard. It's not easy. It's painful. But that being said, there's been millions of people in the country who've gone through it and have had successful outcomes. But it does take, a lot of effort, on the patient's part, to be able to do the rehab and push through that pain. Obviously as a surgeon, it's our goal to make sure that, we give you a knee that's perfectly straight, that's well balanced, that can flex to 120 degrees, at least in the OR. From a hip standpoint, we give you a hip that, it gives you back the correct length, one that's stable and, throughout a wide range of motion, so that we're decreasing your risk for dislocation.
Check those things in the OR, range of motion?
We absolutely do. So
you do. You've put this new knee in. You bend the knee to see if it's got the correct range?
Yeah. So there's a few things that we look for. So one, we got to make sure, again, that we've taken enough bone out so that your knee gets straight. If your knee's not straight, then you're going to have a heck of a time trying to walk. You have start having quad function issues. We make sure that your kneecap's tracking correctly. We make sure that, that you aren't too lax or too stiff. And then, making sure that your knee can flex back a reasonable amount. Because if you're too tight in flexion, then you're not going to get there during the recovery. And then with the hip, again, we're looking also at the range of motion, particularly, depending on what approach you do, which we can talk about later. But it's been kind of a hot topic, but probably short story is that it really doesn't make that much of a difference ultimately. But you're making sure whatever approach the surgeon chooses, making sure that the hip is stable. And again, there's kind of the sweet spot for, exactly where you place the stem. Which is kind of the part of the ball side of the hip, and then making sure that you're putting the cup in the correct position as well to really to try to minimize risk for dislocation.
What are these things made of? Patients have asked me that, and I frankly don't know. What are the what's the hardware made of?
Sure. So the hardware is going to be made of either titanium or some sort of a stainless steel, cobalt chromium, usually some sort of mixture of that. The plastics at this point are basically highly cross-linked polyethylene that's been on the market essentially since 2000 for the hips and about 2001, 2002 for the knees. And that's been kind of our latest kind of evolvement, if you will, from an articulation standpoint. We also have ceramic bearings as well. So those are probably the two main that we're looking at right now. The metal-on-metal articulations have started to fall out of favor as we're starting to see the backlash from that technology.
So the part of it's metal and the other part might be this new plastic material?
Correct. Yeah, so the articulating surfaces at this point are either going to be metal on plastic or it's going to be ceramic on plastic. Or in the case of hips, though it's also fallen out of favor here in the States, is ceramic on ceramic.
Okay. And you talked about approaches. Could you just briefly say, what do you mean by approach? What direction they're coming in at?
Exactly, yeah. So, the two most common approaches have been an anterior lateral approach, so coming from the side of the hip. And there's another approach where you come in from the back of the hip. Some of the newer – well, it's actually a very old approach actually, developed – it was at least first talked by, I believe, back in 1904, which is what now people are re-advertising as the direct anterior approach to the hip. And, you know, again, that's yet another approach in which you can also do
straight
surgery,
from the front.
Straight from the front.
Well, we've got a lot more to talk about with George Hansen, orthopedic surgeon. We also have a lot of text messages, and the phone lines are filling up. I'm going to talk a little bit more after the break with George about how you what you might expect in your recovery and what's going to happen after your surgery. But, Denny, is this a good time to ask some listeners to call?
Yeah, let's do that. In fact, why don't we see Graham, who's been waiting in the law. Pat in Minneapolis has a question first. Pat, what is your question, please?
Yes, I've had a very long journey with orthopedics. I'll try to make it quick. It started out about 10 years ago. I was diagnosed with patellofemoral syndrome and very little arthritis except for under my kneecap, and they decided to replace my kneecap, which didn't work out, and I was sort of in more trouble after that. So a second surgeon decided to try it again. And
oh, I'll tell you what, Pat. Your phone is breaking up. Let's do this since we're going to be up against the clock here. We want to get you to be able to answer your full question. So hang on. We'll probably have to wait till we get to the other side. Let's do this. Let's get see if Donna in St. Peter can't pose the question real fast. Donna, what is your question, please?
Real quick, I had knee surgery, arthroscopic, 2 years ago for a torn meniscus. And since then, I have had 4 syndisc injections. The one in June, I had some side effects where for 2 days I could hardly walk. I couldn't bear any weight on my right leg. And I had one a week ago this past Wednesday, and it was almost 5 days where I could hardly bear weight. Yet I'm still having pain, and it's also down into my calf and up into my thigh. What would cause that?
All right. Well, thanks for the call. Sorry to hear you're having so many problems with that. Obviously, I can't necessarily speak directly to your case in particular, but, you know, kind of speaking in more generalities, often when we have, meniscal tears, it's kind of like a hangnail. And, when we're going in, the idea is to try to clean up that tear because that meniscus can be flipping in into the knee joint, and that can cause usually tends to be kind of a sharp pain, or you might feel like kind of a clicking or a catching. It tends to be a very sudden pain for our listeners. So by cleaning up that knee, you're solving a short-term problem, which is kind of this mechanical issue. Unfortunately, the meniscus is a required structure in our knee, and it acts as a shock absorber. And, when we start losing that shock absorbency, we can start to wear down the cartilage. And so you might be seeing that now, though, again, it's hard to say exactly based without being able to do an examination or looking at imaging. But in general, why might be – so that would probably be the reason why we're probably starting to see some arthritis maybe developing. And then, we can see with the injections, we can have some kind of that rebound pain right after. But over time, we do expect that the hyaluronic acid is probably not going to be as effective over time.
That's what the injection was, the hyaluronic
Correct.
Acid.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, George. We're going to have to take our break. We have a lot more of the show in the next half.
Absolutely. We have almost another half hour of the show to go. So if you did not get in, and Pat, we're going to try to get your call reconnected, 651-989-9226. Text is 81807. And good morning. Welcome to this portion of Healthy Matters this Sunday morning. And Dr. Hilden, for those that maybe joined us a little bit late, why don't you reintroduce your guest? We've got a lot of calls and a lot of text messages.
Indeed we do, Denny. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for listening to the show. As always, thank you so much for listening. Rarely a week goes by that I don't meet some listeners, and it happened this week again. Those of you who are listening and sometimes run into me at the hospital or elsewhere, thanks so much for listening. Today we're talking about knee and hip replacement with Dr. George Hansen, orthopedic surgeon at Hennepin Healthcare. I didn't mention earlier on the show, but I did mention one thing. I said, if you want an orthopedic surgeon, I can tell you where you ought to go. You ought to come down to Hennepin. We have the best in the business. But I didn't tell you how to do that. So if you want to get a hold of any of our Hennepin surgeons, a couple of easy ways to do it. You can call our phone number, which is 612-873-6963. That's 612-873-6963. Or you can always go to hennepinhealthcare.org. It's all one word, hennepinhealthcare.org. And you can find the site for the orthopedic surgery department. So, George, we were talking this is Dr. George Hansen. He's the surgeon. He knows more about this than I do. Tell us we're going to go to Pat's call. Why don't we do that first, actually?
Oh,
Pat
sure.
got
All
cut
right.
off earlier. We're going to go to Pat's call. She was going to talk about the knee. And then we're going to talk about what is recovery like after replacement surgery.
All right, very good. Pat, what is your question, please?
Okay, I'll try to go really fast with this. So I had one surgery for patellofemoral syndrome, and it failed because the knee they put in there became unglued. And so I went on, at that point, had to have a total knee replacement, which also, for some reason, was an abysmal failure. And finally, my third, it was a revision, another knee replacement, went well. And everything went well there, but as I was recovering, I noticed my back hurt. So on my knee checkup, I told the doctor, and I had an x-ray, and my back was a mess, and I had an 8-hour back surgery. And the long of the short of it, my main problem, I had some pain, but my main problem was from day one that I fell all the time, not tripping, not being dizzy, just my knees would lock up and I would fall. And I had a lumbar fusion and some kind of stenosis thing on my back.
Probably spinal stenosis.
Yeah.
So let me jump.
I still, my main problem, I'll just get this in here. That's healed well. So I have a healed well knee on x-ray and a healed well back, and I still fall like that. And I'm wondering if you have any ideas for me.
Pat, thank you for your call and for your patience in getting you back on after the break. Dr. Hansen, can you help us out?
Sure. So let me touch base real quick. So sounds like loosening was kind of an issue for our last caller here. And unfortunately, you know, that is one of the complications with surgery. So again, you know, obviously there's complications, you know, with everyday life, as there is with the hip and knee replacement. And, you know, again, I think this is where, one, choosing, you know, your surgeon, you know, again, you're going into a contract with them and, you know, in a relationship. And it's one that you want to build and foster so that when, you know, obviously we expect things to go right vast majority of time. But matter of fact is with knee replacements, about 20% of patients are either feel like it's not their knee or aren't happy with their knee replacements. And with hip replacements, about 5% are not happy. So
that's good. That's a bit of a difference because I've often told people hips work really well. I rarely find people who didn't like their hip replacement, and 5%. That I think that's a very low number.
It's probably one of the most successful surgery that we do in orthopedics.
Yeah, okay. And knees a little bit more people don't.
Yeah, knees are a little finicky and they're tough because, you know, when you look at the x-ray, you know, and it's like, well, you know, we know they're straight, they look good, and yet patients aren't always happy. And again, now again, 80% are very happy, but another 10% again don't have pain anymore, but they don't feel like it's their knee. And then again, about another 5-10% are just tends to not be very happy. So, and there's a multitude of reasons for that. But in general, so you just want to make sure that you're choosing your surgeon, and you know, so that when things don't necessarily go as well as we would have liked, you are able to then work with that same person to try to troubleshoot.
Pat talked about patellofemoral syndrome.
Sure.
What's that?
So patellofemoral syndrome, unfortunately, you know, it's kind of a grab bag of problems. But the patellofemoral joint, it's where the kneecap runs within the groove of the front part of the knee. And, you know, so whenever there's a bit of an imbalance issue, and it could be because of the shape of the kneecap, it could be the shape of the groove within the front part of the knee. It could be the, you know, it could be your overall limb, alignment and how it's tracking. It could also be strength or lack thereof within your quadriceps. That could all be playing into change in the motion of your knee. So there's a lot of things we try to do initially to try to fix that with rehab, with injections, with exercises. And when all that fails and you've developed arthritis purely within the patellofemoral joint, you can then consider a replacement. Though I will say that's not a very common surgery. And you're probably only going to find joint surgeons who are actually fellowship trained who might do it, and not all of them do. So, or they refer to like maybe some of their colleagues who do them.
I would like to kind of follow up with some text messages to kind of lead us into the next topic, or the more on the topic of recovery. Here's one person that says, well, my knees always feel so heavy even after 6 or 8 months out. Here's another person that says, when can I do stairs after my knee surgery? So talk to us about the recovery.
Sure. So let's start with the knees first. So like I said before, when it comes to knees, I think the general timeline that I tell my patients, first month is tough, and it takes a lot of grueling work to kind of get to really make sure you're really working on getting your knee fully straight with those exercises, and then starting to work on really starting to bend that knee. By about 3 months out is about when you're going to start. You're still going to have. You'll start to wean off your cane and starting to get back to walking on your own without any devices. You're starting to get back into daily activities, but your stamina is not there yet. So you're still going to be working on strength. And what I tell patients is, it's just like working out. After you've done a lifting session, you're going to feel sore, and it's not horribly painful, but you're achy 2 or 3 out of 10. And that's how it is from about month 3 to about month 12 or even a year and a half out. Because for however long you've been debilitated for, it's going to take that much longer for you to get back to, whatever it is that you're desiring to do. So if your goal is to walk 5 miles and you haven't walked 5 miles in 4 or 5 years, well, you can't expect that you're going to build all your strength back in 2 or 3 months. It might take a year. It might even take 2 years.
So this texter with 6 to 8 months out of some heaviness, that's not abnormal.
No, it's not. And, I would strongly advise that you just keep working at it and, keep pushing, and you'll eventually get there. In fact, I also tell my patients that, your knee will be swollen for about a year. It's about a year to a year and a half before you see your kneecap again.
Wow, no kidding.
It takes that long. In fact, you can look out in the clinic, it's about summertime, you see everyone with their scars, and you can just pick out who's over a year out and who's under a year just based on the swelling.
I'm going to ask you this question because, again, it's about recovery. It was a text that came in earlier in the show. It says, I've had both knees done. This is a 63-year-old healthy woman. I've completed a physical therapy a couple months ago, but I've had trouble with range of motion. I'm at 110 degrees in one knee and 115 degrees in the other. Is that enough? What does she mean by that, or he mean by, or she
sure,
mean by that?
Absolutely. So, when you look at the data, in fact, in this, something that when I was looking, even back in Boston doing the kinematics data, on average, patients reach about 118 degrees. It doesn't matter really. There's only about a few degree difference between different types of knee components. But on average, about 118 degrees is average. It's good technology, but it's not perfect. We're not giving patients, a 20, even though you're getting a new knee, you're not getting a 25-year-old's knee. We're giving you a 65-year-old's knee.
If I pay more, can I get the 25-year-old's knee?
I wish. If I knew what that was, believe me, I'd be putting it in. So
when we say degrees of motion, what are we talking about here? I'm trying to think, what does the normal knee do?
So,
native knee, what is the 25 year old knee?
It depends. If you look at my toddler, he can go from, 0 degrees. He can bend his knee.
He's
back.
He's Gumby.
Exactly. He can bring his knee all the way back, heels back, behind his butt.
That's not what you're after in an older adult, huh?
No. Again, if we can get, if we hit 120, that allows you to do everything really in daily life. We talked about getting out of a tub. You need, a good 95, 100 degrees to be able to clear the lip of the tub. You probably need about 100, 105 maybe to do the bicycle to be able to get that knee around unless you have a really high seat post. Stairs, also, you probably need a good 105 to start clearing those steps.
So this texter was 110 degrees and 115 degrees. It's doing okay. Is that a fair statement?
It's okay, yeah. Would I be happy with that? Not necessarily. I would like to see more, but each person is going to have, again, you have to look at each individual.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you started off with a knee that, you know, was, you know, it had very limited motion beforehand, was very stiff, you know, you aren't going to get this, you know, this super 135 degrees. So
we're going to go to the phones after the break.
Absolutely. We'll do that. We'll be back after this quick break here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Good morning. Welcome back to Healthy Matters. We have callers. We have texters, Dr. Hill. And I tell you what, let's I know you have a couple of things to say, but Doug in St. Paul has been waiting. Doug, what is your question, please?
Well, it's not a real question. I just think that you're talking about – I had both knees replaced at the same time on August 24th of 17. The key for me, and I've recovered very well, is they had a series of simple exercises. There were seven of them that they taught us at a class at Methodist, and I did those religiously, and I will tell you, it increased the time that I was that I recovered very, very quickly. I don't know what the doctor thinks about those exercises, but with building up the quads and the butt and the ankles, and when you have both knees replaced at the same time, you don't have a chance to really drag your legs up and down the stairs. They had me going up and down the stairs when I got to the rehab center, probably within 10 days after surgery.
Well, let's find out. What about the exercise?
Yeah, no, I hit it right on the head. Like I said before, again, the surgeon can get you, you know, about 15-20% of the way there. And again, you know, that's really just leaving the OR. And after that, it really comes down to the exercises. You know, again, starting day zero, you know, I want my patients up and walking.
So Doug's right away.
Oh yeah, it's right away. I, you know, as soon as that spinal wears off, as soon as the general anesthesia wears off, and as soon as you can safely get up and walk, I mean, day zero.
But doctor, it hurts.
It unfortunately. So this is where I turned from cheerleader to drill sergeant. And unfortunately, the answer is I don't care. We got to get you up and moving, because the matter of fact is patients who sit around longer are more likely to have complications, and the ones that I worry about most are going to be blood clots. Pneumonias, just because we're not getting up, we're not moving. And our body, it doesn't matter how much we hurt on a daily basis, we're always up and moving, which is why we don't normally get these sorts of complications in daily life.
But so Doug talked about moving the quads and his butt muscles and all that. Is that kind of standard what he was doing?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, so, you know, early on, we're really focusing on quad sets. So, you know, exercises that really kind of wake the quadriceps back up. You know, it's doing the motion exercises, because, again, patients who sit around and don't move those knees after surgery start to get stiff. And, you know, sometimes you fall into this false sense of security, saying, well, once that pain starts, you know, once that pain gets a little better, then I'll start the exercises. And when you fall into that mindset and that trap, patients never get better. In fact, because the pain gets stiffer and stiffer and you get more and more pain. So doing the exercise is important. I will say one other thing is, again, I would caution the listeners, while doing bilateral knee replacements can be successful, it takes a very specific patient, and I would caution the vast majority of patients on actually doing one knee at a time.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Let's see. Bob in Excelsior has been waiting. Bob, what is your question?
I have two friends that have had knee and hip surgery in their 60s. What is the effectiveness of stem cell treatment and the pros and the cons of stem cell treatment?
Thanks for your call, Bob.
Well, matter of fact is right now in the United States, we actually do not have any true stem cell therapies, in the strictest sense, just because it's not been approved by the FDA at this point. There are a few, a very select few academic centers that are actually doing this sort of research, mainly guys at Stanford, University of Pittsburgh, as well as one of my alma maters over at Rush University out in Chicago. So these are all very experimental. And right now, there's really very little data to support that any of this works as of yet. Believe me, once the technology is there, we will know about it. Whoever figures it out will probably win a Nobel Peace Prize or Nobel Prize of some sort. So
maybe the Peace Prize. Yeah. Thanks for that call. I'm going to go to this text line because this is an interesting question. This is from a texter. It says, okay, it's from Mark in Columbia Heights. Occasionally when I'm walking, my right hip feels like it's collapsing or giving out. There doesn't seem to be any pattern or warning when this might occur. Although I've been diagnosed with arthritis in the hip, I don't have any pain associated with the condition.
Sure. So, when it comes to the hip, there is a subset of patients where, well, let's maybe take it back a little bit. With arthritis in general, whether it be the knee or the hip, there are times where, you look at the x-rays and, it looks like horrible arthritis. And yet, the patient's looking at you saying,
doesn't hurt me.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt me. And, so you kind of ask them, well, why are you here? And, they say, well, because my friend told me to. And he said, you need to get that checked out. And, so I guess the first – it comes back down to overall, again, quality of life, what you're doing. Can you do the things that you want to be doing? So if – regardless of what the imaging shows, I would say, if you're not having falls, and it's not causing any problems, then I'm not sure if it's – we can always make you worse, unfortunately, as surgeons. So, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Now, if you are having – so now there are times with knee arthritis, if it's on the outside part of the knee, patients don't necessarily present with pain, but they do present with their knee giving out, and they start having recurrent falls. So even if you don't have pain but you're having recurrent falls, then it might be maybe a reason to consider actually getting that knee replaced. It's not – often, but if you see those elderly patients who are starting to have these falls, it can maybe save you from having a hip fracture down the line. Now, with regards to the hips, there are also a subset of patients where their main complaint is more stiffness as opposed to pain. And same sort of thing. If it's getting to a point where it's really starting to affect your life, getting in and out of a car, being able to drive safely, being able to get up and down stairs safely, then that's a decision that you and your surgeon have to make together as to whether or not it's the right way to go. But once you start really having limitations of motion in that hip, I think the old adage of, the backbone's connected to the hip bone's connected to the knee bone actually does – it's true. I mean, you start changing your mechanics. You start having low back problems, starts affecting your other side, your other knee, your other hip. So at that point, it's probably time to maybe consider at least talking to the surgeon a little more a little more critically about what the next steps ought to be.
From the text line, Dr. Hansen, why do some doctors use the range of motion machine at post knee replacement and some don't?
Well,
we have about a minute.
Sure. Is because data has not proven that it's effective after primary knee replacement. So it's just an extra incurred cost that you're paying or insurance companies paying. So actually, a lot of insurance companies don't pay. I will say maybe a small plug. If just in general, if you have interest in looking at more information, I think a great website for our patients is going to be orthoinfo.com. .org. I apologize. This is orthoinfo.org. It's through the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons. So it's a well vetted group. It's the group that actually provides our licensing and helps with all of our basically kind of our what's kind of considered standard practice.
So. Okay. And 10 seconds. Can people after their knee replacement kneel on their new knees?
About half can, half can't. And it can take a few years before they can. And again, it kind of comes back down to whether or not that knee feels natural or not.
Dr. George Hansen, thank you so much for being with us today. We're out of time.
All right. Thank you.
It's been a great show. I have Dr. George Hansen from Hennepin Healthcare. If you want to get in touch with us, 612-873-MYMD is the phone number.
And next week's show is what?
It's just me on an open line show.
All right. Get your questions ready. That's next week.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detectthesos.com to learn more.
There's nothing like gaining a fresh perspective from experts who've seen it all and have the wisdom to prove it. With MasterClass, you can learn from the best to become your best. With plans starting at $10 a month, billed annually, you get unlimited access to over 200 plus classes taught by the world's best business leaders, writers, chefs, and more. With MasterClass, you get thousands of bite-sized lessons across 13 categories that can fit into even the busiest of schedules. And the classes really make a difference. 3 in 4 surveyed members feel inspired every time they watch MasterClass. And 83% of surveyed members have applied something they've learned from MasterClass to their lives. MasterClass always has great offers during the holidays, sometimes up to as much as 50% off. Head over to masterclass.com/audio for the current offer. That's up to 50% off at masterclass.com/audio. masterclass.com/audio.
You've built a great podcast. The content's solid. The audience is growing. But the money, still not where it should be. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your podcast for free so you can keep doing your thing while our experienced sales team does their thing, finding advertisers and bringing in revenue. No fees, no stress, just real monetization. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.